Welcome to another episode of Law and Religion Down Under, a podcast that covers the intersection of faith and law in the South Pacific. I'm your host, Jeremy Patrick. Our topic today is the decision last year by the Anglican Church of Australia that generated significant media attention, the so-called defrocking of Bishop Roger Hirft. Hirft was a longtime Anglican bishop in Newcastle and Perth, but an investigation concluded that he had failed to take appropriate action many times about complaints that came to him about church employees engaging in the sexual abuse of children. To talk about the decision, I'm grateful to have Mr. Garth Blake, a senior member of the New South Wales Civil and Administrative Tribunal and chair of the Safe Ministry Commission of the Anglican Church of Australia. Mr. Blake, thanks so much for coming on the show. For listeners who aren't very familiar with these issues, could you briefly sum up who Roger Hirft is, why he's become the subject of controversy in the church, and what the proceedings about him were all about?
Bishop Roger Hirft was the Anglican Bishop of Newcastle between 1993 and 2005. As a result of case study 42 of the Royal Commission into Institutional Responses to Child Sexual Abuse, his failure to report allegations of child sexual abuse to the police was the subject of findings, adverse findings by the Royal Commission. And on a referral from the current Bishop of Newcastle, the Anglican Church of Australia inquired into that conduct in an internal church tribunal and found that he had failed to report these allegations to the abuse to the police, and determined the appropriate action was that he be deposed from the exercise of holy orders, or as commonly known as defrocking.
Okay. And I know we're not going to go into great detail about them, but could you talk a little bit about what were the complaints made to him and what were the expectations on him of how he should have acted?
Okay. It's important to know that in New South Wales, there is the criminal offence under section 316 of the Crimes Act, as it then was, to report allegations, knowledge or belief of serious indictable offences to the police. That formed the backdrop to these proceedings. Bishop Hirft admitted it to the Royal Commission. He was aware of that legal obligation from 1999. And from the time he commenced being bishop, he was aware that he should report such allegations to the police. So that's the backdrop to what happened. And there were really four lots of complaints that the Royal Commission considered. One against the then Dean, Dean Graham Lawrence, that he had sexually abused children. Three lots of complaints from the mid to the late 90s. Complaints against two priests, one called Father Rushton, another Father Parker. Again, those complaints were made in the mid to late 90s, up to the early 2000s. And the last lot of complaints involved what was described as the yellow envelope system within the diocese. There was a system where complaints against clergy were kept in a yellow envelope, and the Royal Commission found that there were 24 complaints involving child sexual abuse or allegations, of which only three were reported to the police, the other 21 weren't. And it was those four lots of allegations against three individuals and the yellow envelope system, that was the basis of the adverse findings that Bishop Hirft had failed to report allegations of child sexual abuse to the police.
And I know he gave testimony or statements before the Royal Commission. Did he have an explanation or a justification or some sort of reasoning why he didn't act when he was informed of these allegations or complaints?
Well, look, there's two things that are worth saying about that. In the case of several of the allegations, He said he had no recollection of having received them. And the Royal Commission found it didn't believe that evidence and that there was a failure by Bishop Hirth to report those allegations to the police. In respect to the matters where he did accept that he had received an allegation, he had no explanation as to why he did not. He did not offer any explanation to the Royal Commission.
And it sounds like the Royal Commission was central to sort of bringing these matters to light. How did the Royal Commission find out about what was going on? And would this have come to light eventually if the Royal Commission hadn't been held?
Well, the Royal Commission conducted in excess of 50 case studies throughout its five-year life. Why it chose particular case studies, they didn't reveal that, but there were five or six case studies involving the Anglican Church, particular dioceses or Anglican institutions. Why Newcastle was chosen, I don't know. The second part of your question was, would these allegations have come to light? I think they wouldn't have. They hadn't come to light prior to the commencement of the Royal Commission in 2013, and the conduct involving Bishop Hirft had happened at the latest in 2003. So there'd been a decade gone by where this had not become publicly known.
Okay. And so once the Royal Commission issued its findings, those themselves don't have a sort of direct legal effect, but they were taken up by referral by the Episcopal Standards Board of the Anglican Church. Could you talk a little bit about that body and what those proceedings were like?
Within the Anglican Church, the body which has been established particularly to deal with the conduct of bishops and former bishops involving matters of child protection or child abuse is the Episcopal Standards Board, which applies to all bishops and former bishops, that is diocesan bishops within the Anglican Church. That was a response during the life of the Royal Commission to the recognition that there was no effective means. When I say no effective, the existing means of dealing with these issues was thought to be fairly cumbersome, and the nature of the conduct which could be dealt with was really in the nature of a quasi-criminal charge. And so an alternative means of looking at not whether someone had committed an ecclesiastical offence, but whether they were fit to hold office was established in the Episcopal Standards Board is the mechanism which does that. And once it was established, you could really invoke its processes by making a complaint to the Episcopal Standards Commission, and it considered the material and decided there was a case to answer, and that's why there was a referral to the Episcopal Standards Board.
Okay. And the determination, the final determination of the Episcopal Standards Board was, I think you phrased it, exclusion from holy orders, or properly known as defrocking. Could you explain what does that mean? What are the consequences to Hirft from that decision?
Okay. A member of the clergy within the Anglican Church has the status of being either a deacon or a priest or a bishop by virtue of their ordination. And the particular sanction or action which was decided upon was deposing him from the exercise of his holy orders. Ordination or holy orders is a reference to the status held by a member of the clergy in the Anglican Church. And so the deposing him from the exercise of holy orders means that he cannot act as a bishop. He cannot act as an ordained minister of the Anglican Church. I mean, in a technical sense, he's still ordained, but he can't carry out any function that would relate to his ordained status.
Okay. And I think, I'm not sure, from news reports, it sounds like perhaps he was retired or had retired when these allegations came to light. Is that correct?
Well, I think the timing was that the referral by the current Bishop of Newcastle was made while he was still the Archbishop of Perth, after he concluded his term as the Bishop of Newcastle, he became the Archbishop of Perth. But once the hearing became public, he resigned as the Archbishop of Perth. I think it was just a few months before his sort of statutory retirement, if I could call it that, when it became public. But certainly at the time, the hearing took place in September last year, and the findings, he was a retired bishop of the church.
Okay. And so I know he can't exercise any ordained offices or functions. Is he still, for example, welcome as a worshiper at a Sunday service? Or is it more like, I'm not in England, is it something like excommunication where he's formally no longer a member of the church?
No, there's no sanction against anyone in the church now of excommunication that existed in the past, but it no longer exists. Now, he would be free to attend an Anglican church. It's just that he cannot exercise any function he would have as an ordained person.
Okay. And you've mentioned that in the civil legal system, there are many states have relatively new over the past couple of decades, criminal laws criminalizing the failure to report credible allegations of child sex abuse. Is that something, are charges like that, have they been brought in cases like what Roger Herf's inaction was? Is it likely that charges like that could be brought in the future? Or is the reliance on the internal church procedures probably the best prospect of any sort of action being taken against him?
Not every jurisdiction in Australia has an equivalent to Section 316 of the Crimes Act. Victoria now has one. It's possible other jurisdictions have, but at the time that this happened, New South Wales alone had a criminal offence of concealing a crime, and the old common law offence of misprision of felony, I think, had been abolished in all other jurisdictions. But there has been one other sort of well-known case in New South Wales of a prosecution for concealing a serious criminal offence or failing to report a serious criminal offence, which was brought against the Catholic, former Catholic Archbishop of Adelaide, who had, prior to that appointment, held office in New South Wales. That is Bishop Brian Wilson. But when he was a priest in the Hunter area in the 70s, there was an allegation that he had received knowledge about child sexual abuse committed by a colleague, another Catholic priest, and failed to report it. There was in the 2000s, a prosecution, sorry, not the 2000s, the second decade, a prosecution brought against him, that there had earlier been a special commission of inquiry dealing with those allegations, amongst other things. And before a magistrate, he was convicted of that offence, but there was an appeal to a district court judge and he was acquitted. So the only other case of which I'm aware involving a member of the clergy using that particular, involving that criminal offence was unsuccessful.
Okay. What was the, we know that Roger Herft was the most senior figure in the church to lose their position over inaction like this. And we should clarify to listeners that he's not been accused of any personal misconduct along these lines, only inaction of responding to complaints. What was the reaction when the Episcopal Standards Board, issued its decision? Has it been generally well received by sort of the rank and file within the church, or has it been a controversial decision?
I don't think I can answer that. Certainly there was some publicity in the press at the time, and I can say that I believe that this is the first occasion on which this has happened within the Anglican Communion involving a bishop being having the most severe sanction imposed upon him for a failure to act. Around the world, there have been only a tiny number of cases where a member of the clergy has had some state sanction against them through failure to report abuse. And just like there have been failed prosecutions in Australia involving Bishop Philip Wilson, there also have been failed prosecutions around the world, and perhaps the best known example is Cardinal Philippe Barbarin, who was the Archbishop of Lyon, who was convicted of failing to report sexual abuse of clergy, but ultimately the conviction was quashed. So this is not a common occurrence, but I think what it indicates is that the state considers that not only the abuse of children by clergy is reprehensible, but the failure to report abuse is reprehensible too. And it's not hard to see that a failure to report abuse will allow abusers their conduct to continue, and whereas abuse may well have been prevented if the police had known about it, it can, and I imagine has continued with increased suffering and harm that need not have happened. So it's a very significant moral failure.
Agreed. And to my mind, a decision like this at least puts people on notice within the church that this is taken extremely seriously, and that even if there's not criminal charges brought against them for inaction, the church itself will respond quite directly and seriously about the inaction like this.
Yes. And in the particular piece of internal legislation, if I can call it that, there is not only the ability to examine conduct for committing child abuse, but a specific provision that enables a failure to report child abuse to the police to be investigated. And that is ultimately what Bishop Herft, that the failure was. So there's a very specific provision that enables an inquiry to someone's of a bishop's fitness to hold office through a failure to report child abuse to the police.
I suppose my wrapping up my final question is, do you think we as a in the legal system, do we need more legislation around this within the church? Do we need changes to church procedures to address this? Or are we sort of in a good position and we just need to find people who do things like Hearths in Action and make sure that they face the consequences?
In terms of what the jurisdictions do, as I said, as far as I'm aware, not every jurisdiction has a similar criminal offence for failure to report a serious crime, of which child abuse would be a significant example to the police. And it seems to me that that is an important sort of sanction that society should have available to it, because it is the failure to report crimes and, for example, child abuse that allows it to continue. So, but within the church, I think the disciplinary systems which churches have were developed well before child abuse became a public issue. And I think the response within the Anglican Church was to recognise that the existing systems, at best were cumbersome, at worst didn't adequately provide for dealing with this issue. And for example, while there's always been a disciplinary system for clergy, there hasn't always been a disciplinary system for lay people who may commit abuse. And such a system's now being put in place in the various dioceses. So I think the public awareness of child sexual abuse and the involvement of ordained and lay Anglican leaders in committing child sexual abuse has caused the re-examination of the adequacy of our procedures to respond to it, and in changes and I'd say improvements have been made. And the fact that Bishop Hirft was disciplined, I think, is testimony to the efficacy of those changes.
I very much agree. Well, thank you so much for participating in this conversation. These are difficult and serious issues, but I really appreciate how clearly you've explained the situation and ways to potentially move forward. So thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Jeremy.
And that concludes this episode of Law and Religion Down Under. If you'd like to read the decision of the Episcopal Standards Board of the Anglican Church of Australia, or Mr. Blake's article about it in the Ecclesiastical Law Journal, I'll place links to them in the show notes. Until next time, thanks for listening.